May is Fibromyalgia Awareness Month. It's important to raise awareness about this chronic and often debilitating invisible illness known as fibromyalgia. This month-long campaign is an opportunity to educate people about the symptoms, causes, and treatments of fibromyalgia, as well as to show support for those living with these and other related invisible illnesses. Through increased awareness, we can work towards better understanding and management of fibromyalgia and ultimately improve the quality of life for those who are affected by it. And now on to this week's episode. Should we rename long COVID as a new word for fibromyalgia? I will be reviewing two different opinions on this as we try to understand the similarities between this and fibromyalgia and other overlapping pain conditions. This is the Conquering Your Fibromyalgia podcast. I am your host, Dr. Michael Lenz. I am a pediatrician, an internal medicine doctor, clinical lipidologist, and a lifestyle medicine physician. I've had over 27 years of experience as a doctor using a holistic approach, the biopsychosocial spiritual model of understanding complex problems like fibromyalgia and other overlapping chronic pain conditions. I'm also author of the book Conquering Your Fibromyalgia, Real Answers and Real Solutions for Real Pain. Remember that while I am a doctor, I am not your doctor. All of your signs and symptoms should be discussed with your own individual physician. And now on to this week's episode. Long COVID is a name given to a syndrome comprising a wide variety of symptoms persisting more than 3 months after an acute benign COVID-19 infection occurs, with prevalence that ranges from 10 to 80%. Symptoms are very close to those of fibromyalgia. Several studies showed that long COVID prevalence was much higher after the first wave of pandemics. The first wave of the pandemics was associated to the fact of thinking having had COVID rather than having had really COVID. Thus, it was the stress of the first wave with the lockdown and not the consequences of the infection that probably induced this high frequency of long COVID. Numbers of studies tried to find objective biological abnormalities for explaining long COVID, but none of them could be replicated and convincing. The concept of long COVID seems to be a repetition of history of medicine in which the doctors and society gave different names to fibromyalgia with the objective of trying to highlight the fact that fibromyalgia could be a somatic disease with a well-understood pathophysiology and to avoid to focus on psychosomatic aspects of the disease. In conclusion, to name is to soothe, as said by Roland Barthes. However, naming things wrongly adds to the world's unhappiness was a saying of Albert Camus. Thus, the term long COVID, which suggests viral persistence and impaired immune response to the virus, is unappropriated and should be replaced by fibromyalgia-like post-COVID syndrome. Research on the psychosomatic and somatic mechanisms involved in these fibromyalgia-like post-viral syndromes must be encouraged. To review, COVID-19 had caused at least 18 million deaths across the world. However, most who had COVID-19 had no symptoms or only mild symptoms, usually upper respiratory. And a high percentage of patients from 10 to up to 80% having suffered a benign illness without any organ damage. A wide variety of symptoms persisted more than 3 months after COVID-19, which has been called long COVID. Some patients with immune deficiency may have had prolonged COVID positive PCR, and those patients do really have long COVID. Other patients have experienced severe COVID-19 pneumonitis. Having spent time in the intensive care unit, may have suffered for months of shortness of breath, fatigue, and other symptoms analogous to those presented by the patients with the same severe diagnosis of other origins. In other words, if they had physical damage, there would be shortness of breath. If there was less functional lung capacity or there was restricted airflow, there would be symptoms that you'd expect similar to if somebody had COPD or emphysema, for example. Most patients with long COVID had a benign or mild COVID infection, meaning they weren't admitted to the hospital or went to the emergency room. Not that they didn't have symptoms that we might think of as a severe outpatient fatigue and upper respiratory infections, but they also had other nonspecific symptoms such as fatigue, widespread pain, sleep disturbance, cognitive problems, and a foggy brain. World Health Organization proposed criteria for long COVID. Long COVID, also known as post-COVID condition, refer to a wide range of symptoms and conditions that people experience 4 or more weeks after an initial infection by the COVID virus. The symptoms and conditions may last for weeks, months, or years, and it can be persistent, meaning they develop during an acute COVID-19 illness and haven't gone away, or recurrent, meaning they go away after an illness and then return, or new, meaning they were not present initially or developed later. Long COVID can range from mild to debilitating symptoms, with some reporting symptoms so severe that they are unable to return to work, have difficulty performing everyday chores, and even walking long distances. What are the symptoms? They include feeling tired, weakness, brain fog with difficulty concentrating or thinking, headaches, tremors, palpitations or rapid pounding heart feeling or skipped beats, dizziness upon standing. Symptoms that worsen after physical or mental activity, known as post-exertional malaise, or PEM for short. That's a symptom of chronic fatigue syndrome. Gastrointestinal symptoms, including stomach pain, diarrhea, and or constipation. A change in smell or taste. Other symptoms include dry mouth and cough, changes in comfort or capacity for sex, chest pain, tightness or pressure, ringing in the ears, shortness of breath, muscle and joint soreness, fevers, sweats or chills, hair loss, sleep problems, insomnia, bladder problems, including painful bladder syndrome, vision problems, including blurry vision, sensitivity to light, flashing lights, difficulty reading or focusing eyes, depression, anxiety, and swelling of the legs, and problems with teeth pain or jaw pain, foot pain, skin rashes, and abnormal movements or twitching, and skin color changes. There also can be menstrual changes as well as pain with your period. And it is interesting to note how these symptoms overlap with fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is well known, and it's an entity that involves almost 5% of the general population, especially women. The term of fibromyalgia was introduced in the 1980s. Its purpose was to put a name on the symptoms, but it does not reflect the origin or the pathophysiology of the disease. By not reflecting the origin of a disease, you can have a disease such as Lyme disease, where the origin is in Lyme, Connecticut, and it's caused by a specific bacteria. This is common for infections, where if you have the malaria, it's caused by a specific parasite. If you have an infection in a local organ, such as appendicitis, you know that the name is referred to the location of the inflammation. Fibromyalgia did not have that specific traditional biomedical attachment. And at the time, they didn't have a clear pathophysiology worked out, but they did want to shift the thinking from the psychosomatic, as in it's just in your head and it's not real. And they were going to have to spend time researching it. And it was over 20 years later where they did finally have a much better understanding of this as a centralized pain, or what we now call a nociplastic pain disorder. The author of the article, Long COVID, A New Word for Naming Fibromyalgia, remarks that it's amazing through history of medicine how doctors and society gave different names to fibromyalgia. These names include neurasthenia, which we've talked about on this podcast, fibrositis, myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, idiopathic diffuse polyalgic syndrome, Gulf War syndrome, macrophages, myofasciitis, post-spiral syndrome, Zika, asthenia, polyalgia syndrome, chronic Lyme disease, chronic chikungunya disease, Ehlers-Danlos spectrum, and now long COVID. He recognizes there are a number of arguments suggesting that long COVID could be a post-traumatic syndrome just like fibromyalgia. One of the most convincing arguments made for this was that the first wave of COVID in France was recognized by epidemiologists and psychologists from Paris University, in which 26,823 healthy subjects were followed. In the study, they looked at the odds of reporting symptoms long COVID, such as fatigue, with a ratio of 5, which means they were 5 times more likely to report symptoms if they believed they had COVID, despite having a negative serology, compared to those who did not believe they had COVID and had a negative serology or antibody test that came back negative for COVID. Breathing difficulties had an odd ratio of 7.2, and chest pain was at 6.8, and palpitations and cough were at 5 and 4.3, respectively. Another study done in Strasbourg showed that frequency of long COVID after COVID-19 exposure was almost twice after the first wave compared to the second one, where both waves in France were due to the same variant of the COVID virus. The stress in society was much less important during the second wave than in the first one. Likewise, long COVID has been found to be much less frequent after Omicron waves that were less severe. It also may be related to different variants acting differently for inducing long COVID. In a prospective cohort study in the Netherlands, looking at the frequency of long COVID in those who had inflammatory rheumatoid arthritis compared to healthy controls, and they found that there was a 53% greater likelihood of having long COVID, with the p-value being at 0.12, and we like to get that p-value at 0.1 or less to be statistically relevant. What that means, in other words, is that there's an 88% chance that that is valid. If we did the study 188 out of 100 times, that would come true, and 12% of the time it could be by chance or error. What was interesting is that, like in the previous study, among patients and healthy controls without any history of COVID, the frequency of symptoms of long COVID was high and higher in patients with inflammatory rheumatic disease, suggesting that they probably correspond to fibromyalgia-like symptoms known to be more frequent in inflammatory rheumatic diseases and likely triggered by stress. This is not much different than 6 months after any viral infection, where up to 12% of patients may suffer from persistent fatigue. Is there a specific biological footprint or explanation from the immune response or from the COVID infection? Is there persistent viruses? Is there persistent proteins from the immune response to explain long COVID? Well, that has been looked at by many studies. There were a number of studies trying to find objective biologic abnormalities for explaining long COVID, but none of them could be replicated and convincing. Most of the studies failed to detect the virus at the time of the long COVID symptoms, which could lead to replacing the term long COVID by post-COVID-19 symptoms. There was a Dutch cohort study with a general population filling out regular questionnaires, which showed about 11% of people complaining of long COVID symptoms 3 to 5 months after COVID-19 compared to before COVID-19 and compared with matched, not infected controls. This is not different than what has been shown 6 months after any viral infection, where up to 12% of people may suffer from persistent fatigue. What about the role of biological proteins in relation to long COVID symptoms? A number of studies have tried to find objective biological abnormalities, but none of them could be replicated or convincing. Most of the studies failed to detect the virus at the time of long COVID symptoms, which would lead to replace the term long COVID by post-COVID-19 symptoms. There was one study where interferon beta and interferon gamma were increased in patients with long COVID symptoms 8 months after infection compared with patients without symptoms. However, the two groups were not comparable, with 8 out of the 31 patients having been hospitalized in the long COVID group versus only 2 out of 31 in the control group, and increased interferon level may persist in patients for a long time after severe COVID. A recent proteomic study also found that interferon signature in patients with long COVID, but serum interferon alpha levels was not found different from patients without symptoms after COVID-19 in another study. There has been a search for a possible autoimmune origin, In a recent study, some patterns of autoantibodies were detected after SARS infection, but not differently between patients with persistent symptoms and those without. What that means is you would expect to find a much higher percentage of antibodies in those with persistent symptoms, but they did not find that. There was an extensive biological study in healthcare workers having experienced benign or mild COVID. They found no difference in antibody responses to the spike protein or nucleoprotein. They also did not find any difference in viral neutralization or T cell responses and profile of antibody waning between the subjects having or not having symptoms after 9 months. In his conclusion, he says, again, to name is to soothe, as said by Roland Barthes, a famous French philosopher, and it is important to put a name on the symptoms present in around 5 to 10% of people more than 3 months after a benign COVID-19 infection. But naming things wrongly adds to the world's unhappiness, was said by Albert Camus. Thus, the term of long COVID would suggest viral persistence of impaired immune response to the virus is certainly inappropriate in his mind and should be replaced by fibromyalgia-like post-COVID-19 syndrome that better reflects the reality and allows patients to use all the non-pharmacological therapeutic arsenal used in fibromyalgia for being cured. Indeed, this specific form of fibromyalgia, where the stressing event is clearly identified, the prognosis is better than common fibromyalgia after using these therapeutics. Research on the mechanisms involved in these fibromyalgia-like post-viral syndromes in order to dissect the psychosomatic and somatic involved mechanisms, the consequences, and central sensitization of pain. What he concludes is that the specific forms of fibromyalgia-type symptoms where there is a clearly identified event has a better prognosis, probably because it's identified earlier in the course. There already is extensive amount of research on fibromyalgia and overlapping pain syndromes with a central pain sensitization mechanism now referred to as nociplastic pain. And due to that extensive research and understanding, implementation of a multifaceted approach should be implemented. In a second opinion piece by Dr. Daniel Claw and Leonard Calabrese, the title is Rheumatology and Long COVID Lessons from the Study of Fibromyalgia. They discuss how rheumatology, such as other specialties, has both a unique perspective to offer as well as evolving role to play in the COVID-19 pandemic. The field has contributed meaningfully to the development and repurposing of many of the immune-based therapeutics, which are now standard treatments of severe forms of the disease, as well as to the understanding of the epidemiology, risk factors, and natural history of COVID-19 in immune-related inflammatory diseases. The field of rheumatology has many insights to bring to the study of long COVID. The paper's focus was on the strong similarities between fibromyalgia and long COVID. While one can speculate on how embracing and confident practicing rheumatologists already are regarding these relationships in the emerging field of long COVID, the potential lessons from field of fibromyalgia and research have been underappreciated and marginalized. What they're saying is there is so much to offer from the perspective of fibromyalgia in understanding these long COVID patients and what they're going through. This area has been underappreciated and marginalized, as we talked about in the episode on what are the most and least prestigious medical conditions in the eyes of doctors and the medical community, including medical students, and fibromyalgia was at the bottom of the list. This understanding is so important when we look at trying to make sense out of the confusion of long COVID. It's almost like the movie where the kid that never gets picked and is teased and put in the corner and nobody thinks he's worth anything, and then maybe the group of kids is on a field trip and they're trapped in some cave or some predicament, and this kid who was picked on and marginalized ends up having the problem-solving skills and is able to figure out a way to escape through his ingenuity and abilities. and he may have been ignored or underappreciated and not given the true support and may have been picked on over the years. And similar, this area of fibromyalgia has often been not appreciated and is now deserving a critical look because we aren't finding the typical biomedical answers to this. Looking back at the opinion piece, they go on to say, as the pandemic evolved, the growing number of patients infected with the COVID-19 reported long-lasting and persistent symptoms following the normal duration of COVID-19. In those with severe COVID-19, these long-term sequelae may be attended by clear evidence of underlying tissue pathology like pulmonary scarring, vascular thromboses, post-intensive care, psychological trauma, for example. All of these have a reasonable basis for understanding post-infection symptoms. However, other symptoms of long COVID are very specific to the COVID virus, including loss of smell and taste. These were common in the pre-Omicron strains, but have become relatively rare. However, much more common are those individuals who, following mild to moderate COVID-19, developed heterogeneous and diverse collection of largely unexplained symptoms dominated by fatigue, often with features of post-exertional malaise, neurocognitive dysfunction, often referred to as brain fog, sleep disturbances, and various forms of pain, including muscle soreness, joint pain, headaches, chest pain, and more. As the international research community attempts to unravel long COVID, much has been written regarding the similarities with chronic fatigue syndrome, yet relatively little has been discussed regarding the similar strong parallels to a condition with a rich background of clinical and basic research, which is familiar to the rheumatology community and others. Fibromyalgia and other closely related pain conditions have been extensively studied and have the potential to serve as resources for both mechanistic and clinical studies in long COVID. The international pain community had recognized that fibromyalgia is the overriding pain condition known as nociplastic pain, where one of the seminal features includes fatigue, memory, sleep, and mood issues as the core symptoms. Several of those with experience in fibromyalgia wrote in an editorial just a few months after the pandemic, predicting much of what long COVID would look like based on previous experience with similar post-infectious, post-deployment, and/or post-traumatic exposures that triggered nearly identical conditions. And that was discussed in last week's episode. They believed it was time to critically appraise the relationships between long COVID and fibromyalgia and related conditions to draw on this body of data for current research and future therapies. Fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome are now considered chronic overlapping pain conditions, which include other common conditions such as tension, headache, irritable bowel syndrome, low back pain, TMJ disorders, and bladder pain syndrome, to name some of the more common ones. In the newest International Classification of Disease criteria, these conditions are lumped together as primary pain syndrome. Nociceptive pain occurs because of inflammation or damage of peripheral tissues, and neuropathic pain is due to nerve injury. Nociplastic pain is largely driven by the central nervous system. Sometimes these can overlap, where you'll have people who have an autoimmune disease like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis and can have a nociplastic or central nervous pain component. In the past, this was called central sensitization, and it's still something that you'll hear many people refer to. In all of these conditions, there are small subsets of individuals whose pain is driven by ongoing nociceptive input, peripheral inflammation or damage, or neuropathic mechanisms, but the primary nociplastic mechanism in all these conditions are thought to be driven by the same central nervous system process.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I want to briefly interrupt the podcast to inform you about the Fibromyalgia Starter Pack, which is now available. If you are new to this podcast, it categorizes the episodes in a way that it's more beneficial for those new to fibromyalgia. You can access the link in the show notes to learn more.
These same nociplastic mechanisms are also commonly superimposed on nociplastic pain states such as autoimmune disorders, where up to a third or more are thought to have what we used to be called secondary fibromyalgia, and then more recently, central sensitization. The risk factors for these conditions include female sex, which has an odds ratio of 1.5, socioeconomic status factors, poor sleep, physical inactivity, and cigarette smoking, which overlaps a tremendous amount with what is seen in long COVID. In the studies that have closely examined the post-infectious pain manifestations of both COVID and similar post-infectious syndromes, individuals who have pain pre-infection are likely to be left with more chronic pain as one of the sequelae, although many develop de novo pain. What that is saying is that if you have a chronic pain syndrome prior to the infection, you're much more likely to be left with more chronic pain post-COVID infection. What are some of the potential pathophysiological links between fibromyalgia and long COVID? Further alignment between long COVID and nociplastic pain is pathophysiologic. At present, there was no agreement of a singular pathogenic mechanism in long COVID across clinical domains, though evidence is emerging for numerous suspected pathways, including autoimmune, the effects of persistent viral infection or latent viral reactivation, microvascular disease, dysbiosis or abnormal gut bacteria, and tissue damage. Of particular relevance to the connection between long COVID and fibromyalgia is shared evidence of central nervous system dysfunction, including glial activation and central sensitization, which are well documented across both disorders. Glial cells are nerve cells that help support and connect and protect the neurons of the central and peripheral nervous systems. They come in many different shapes, sizes, and types, each performing specialized functions in the central nervous system. Glial cells help regulate neurotransmission and help form the blood-brain barrier. Using functional neuroimaging and quantitative testing techniques in nociplastic states such as fibromyalgia, researchers have been able to identify reproducible neural signatures, some of which even might be present in children who are at risk of subsequently developing this spectrum of illness. Neurologic antecedents, or factors that are present ahead of time prior to development of multi-site pain in children, is extremely fascinating. It makes us almost have an X-ray vision to recognizing whether somebody is at higher risk of developing pain later on. Now, there are other factors that you can take into account, such as family history and other comorbidities. But if you know you have that, then early intervention to help optimize somebody's health and lifestyle is extremely important. This is worth another look in a future episode, just looking at this study itself and the significant implications that this would have. The role of psychological factors in the nociplastic conditions is somewhat contentious, but becoming increasingly understood. Many early studies in these conditions focused on psychological factors being causative, since many or most individuals with a nociplastic pain condition will exhibit some form of psychological distress. But more recent studies have shown that many individuals with chronic pain who have high levels of depression or catastrophizing have rapid improvements in these areas when they are successfully treated for their pain, suggesting a strong bidirectional relationship. When a nociplastic state is triggered by a stressor such as deployment to war, infection, or trauma, the typical course is that individuals begin sleeping poorly, become fatigued and less active, and develop distress since they are uncertain of whether or when they will improve. Researchers have shown the importance of sleep and activity with these conditions. Fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome state can be experimentally induced in healthy individuals with sleep restriction or exercise cessation, and was noted in 2011 in individuals with acute respiratory distress syndrome. Often when individuals with these nociplastic states seek health care for these nonspecific symptoms, they are minimized or ignored, since few clinicians have experience treating this spectrum of illness. Thus, it is not surprising that many have psychological comorbidities that should be addressed, just as we should target these issues with sleep, pain, and functional decline. With the understanding that long COVID appears to be a highly clinically variable disorder with multiple clinical types, they propose that long COVID and fibromyalgia, as well as other forms of chronic overlapping pain conditions, should be viewed as collectively a rich network of interrelated disorders for which a shared pathogenic mechanism which may account for a significant segment but clearly not all of this evolving clinical spectrum. In the world of rheumatology, they have known effective treatments for inflammation and resultant tissue damage in individuals with autoimmune disorders, many or most of which are still left with a constellation of fatigue, multifocal pain, sleep, memory, and mood disturbances. This is related to many having the neuroimmune connection that is occurring much more commonly in those, for example, who have a neurodivergent style brain and nervous system that we've talked about on other episodes. The rheumatologists have very effective medications that can quickly shut down the inflammation and the joint destruction that occurs, but these symptoms are continuing, as Dr. Claw points out in this article. In addition, the most effective treatments of these nociplastic pain conditions are non-pharmacologic therapies, such as various types of cognitive behavioral therapy, having individuals become more active and engaging in the use of a number of integrative therapies, such as meditation, yoga, tai chi, physical and movement therapies, and acupuncture and acupressure. Pain in these conditions is not typically responsive to opioids or anti-inflammatories, and instead, medications such as tricyclic antidepressants, gabapentinoids, and dual serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors that act on the central nervous system can be helpful. Also, as I've seen in many of my patients who have comorbid ADHD, treating ADHD can have improvement in not only ADHD symptoms, but a lot of the chronic fatigue symptoms as we've talked about in other podcasts. While there are many integrative therapies now undergoing clinical trials in long COVID, our past experience in fibromyalgia and related conditions could and should inform these and future studies in design and interpretation. They conclude that the relationship between long COVID and fibromyalgia and other chronic overlapping pain conditions is strong and supported by elements providing both base and content validity based on a large body of clinical and research data. And collectively, they feel that these symmetries support the need to advance a research agenda to shared mechanisms across these conditions that might hopefully provide new insights for better understanding and treatments for both. What are your thoughts on long COVID and the connections? It appears that the chase for the biomedical model, the one simple pathologic connection, is not clear, and there is very strong support that this should fall under fibromyalgia-related illnesses, also known as chronic overlapping pain conditions. One of the benefits of this study and long COVID patients in general is that you cannot deny that these are real patients who are suffering, and they all came at once, or supposedly came at once, in the eyes of the whole world. There was a lot of fear associated with it. In the past, those who had fibromyalgia would have relatively random acute stress events. They may have had influenza, may have had a car accident, or an acute stress or emotional event that happened in their life inducing symptoms. But we saw the whole world going through a pandemic at the same time. And now they're coming to clinics with persistent symptoms, and we need to give them proper answers. And as I have in the subtitle of the book, this is real answers and real solutions for real pain and fatigue and brain fog and sleeping problems, and all of that bundled under the biopsychosocial spiritual model of providing care for individuals who are truly struggling. That's where we are going to end this week's episode. I'd love to hear your feedback. As always, you can email me at drmichaellenz@gmail.com. And one of the ways you can show appreciation for the podcast is to leave a review, hit the like and follow button, and share with others. Until next week, go Team Fibro.